Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. If you set out to name five current stand-up comedians, the name Dylan Moran might not make your list, unless you are a fan of the 2004 cult movie hit Shaun of the Dead, or the somewhat more obscure BBC television show Black Books, which had a three-season run a decade ago. Despite his dabbling in movies and TV, Irish comedian Dylan Moran remains a staple of the stand-up circuit on a global level. His humor is observational, things like relationships and culture, with the obvious additional perspective of an outsider looking at American life. Here is just a sample.
Because they're afraid of a woman's contempt. And women, as a group, en masse, do show contempt for men, en masse. Now, a woman might be afraid of an individual violent man, which is very sensible. Everybody should be afraid of an individual violent man. But as a group, you hear a lot of contempt about men. Oh, look, look at them. Look, there they go. One of them is trying to do something.
Moran was in Milwaukee last fall for a show at Turner Hall, and the stand-up comedian sat down with our own in-house resident yuckster Dan Harmon and talked about his early days in the business.
Well, before I did Black Books, I was circuit stand-up in London, where you have to go to learn how to do it, really. I was there for about 4 years. And so doing sometimes 2-3 shows a night all over the city, jumping on buses, jumping in cabs to get to the next show. And it's noisy and rowdy, and you have to do a lot of crowd control, and you have to be sort of tolerant and not afraid of failing, because that happened a few times. It does if you're doing probably, I don't know, hundreds of performances a year. And, you get toughened up and you get used to shouting at people and being shouted at and not really minding too much. And everybody does it for a couple of years and then they want to get the hell out of there. And you really do, because when I began, there were names who were doing it had been doing it for 10 or 15 years. And when I left, they're still doing it. And I see their names, some same names in the lists. And that was kind of the thing you were afraid of. You didn't want to stay on that circuit, because you can, there are cases where you just don't get out. So my agent said to me, come on, write something. And I submitted a script for a sitcom festival, and then people liked it. It got picked up. We made people laugh. They said, okay, let's make this program. I mean, that was it. You know, there was no big run-up. There was no plan. I never had a plan.
Nor did you have a desire to be a bookstore owner or working
in a shop. That idea just came from spending quite a lot of time in these places and noticing that all the guys who were in there looked like they just had some sort of, digestive problem.
All right. Well, I don't know. Maybe it played sort of a prominent role in the series, but I just want your take on how much drinking and alcohol plays a part in your comedy.
Well, I grew up in Ireland in the 70s, so these were unreconstructed times. This is before. It's not like America where, there's health warnings on plastic spoons saying plastic spoons can damage your health if you stick them in your ear. Ireland was one of those places where people routinely imbibed huge quantities of alcohol and then flung themselves into cars to do long and arduous cross-country journeys. So that was just part of the culture. Different times. And it was around, it's part of the culture. It's around. And it was also around in those sort of semi-bohemian or rackety environments in London, where a lot of those bookshops were too. Kind of a down at heel, seedy, not very competitive or glamorous or a success-led kind of way of living, just people trying to inch along to the next day or the next week. And blotting themselves out with cheap Spanish red wine at the end of the day.
So how much of that character was you?
You use bits of yourself in whatever you're doing, but when it comes to those characters, they're so heightened, they're so exaggerated. It's a character. This is very important to understand. I'm sometimes surprised people still ask, how much of it is you, because, yes, I've got black hair or dark brown hair or whatever color my hair is, and I sit in chairs and I read and I can drink some wine, but there's not a huge crossover, because the character's nuts. If you lived like that, you'd be dead very quickly.
Well, I mean, did it give you a chance to further hone your craft, I guess? I mean, completely different style of writing than stand-up?
Yeah, well, I'd always been writing different things. I'd always been writing bits of prose and bits of plays and all kinds of stuff, so I wasn't starting from nothing, yeah, it gave me a chance to work with great people. And because I was so involved in the making of the program and because I was worried about the scripts and would these jokes go over and so on, I didn't worry about acting. I was never very interested in acting, to be honest. I never thought about it very much. I just sort of turned up and tried to make sure that we hit the jokes the way they were intended to work. So it meant that I was relaxed about performing because I was too worried about the show, if you know what I mean.
Well, it looks like you guys had a lot of fun doing it, though.
We did have a lot of fun doing it. I mean, I was very lucky. You know, I was working with really stellar talents there with Bill and Tamsin. They're exceptional people.
Well, you just mentioned acting. So did it give you a further opinion of whether or not you wanted to keep doing stand-up? I mean, obviously you have kept doing it since then.
Yeah, that's because I like eating and being able to buy socks, you know. I wouldn't exaggerate the level of choice I have in all of this. You know, one has to live. And look, it's a really interesting way to live. You get to travel around. If it wasn't for what I do, I would never have ended up in Milwaukee, for instance. I would never have had a chance to walk your empty, empty, lonely streets.
All right. Well, it's just my opinion anyway, and I don't know. I think comedians are uniquely qualified to comment on culture. You have to be a cultural observationalist. So what are your current observations?
Well, I'm looking at where I am and what's going on. So obviously my head is full of America at the moment, trying to figure out why it's working or not working the way it is just at present. It does seem to be in a really interesting, if crazy, phase with your very infantile obstructionist politics going on. I'm not sure how much longer that can last. The Republicans are in a deeply hilarious phase as far as I'm concerned. They're more and more extreme, more and more aggressive, and less and less forthcoming with anything that resembles an idea. So I just want to see how far they can take it. I mean, fully expecting people to be jumping up and down and tearing off their shirts and throwing them across the room quite soon.
It seems like you haven't really spent too much time focusing on American culture, American politics in your stand-up routines. Some of it, but I'm wondering if...
Yeah, well, I'm more into... You know. I'm especially interested in, not exclusively, but especially interested in sort of, you know, how we see each other from across the Atlantic, or how Americans think of the other parts of Europe, apart from Britain and Ireland. And, you know, everybody talks about America. That's probably one of the unique aspects of the country. Not everybody's talking about Britain or France or Japan, you know, but everybody talks about America because if you scratch your left ear, it has big consequences all around the world. So you're the only ones in that position, and sometimes I think Americans are a bit freaked out by the extremity of reaction that everybody has about them. But that's because you are in the one remaining empire on the planet, so it really matters. It may not feel like an empire at home, but believe me, it does in Europe and lots of other parts of the world. We all care about America and what America is up to.
Well, at the same time, it gives you a lot more material.
Yeah.
I would hope so, anyway.
Yeah, well, you've given us endless material over the years. You continue to provide material at an astonishing rate. You know, the country is completely bewildering in its immensity and scale. And like I say, those consequences of something very small at home, I really don't think Americans understand that, how gripped everybody else is, how everybody watches and wonders what America's going to do next. It really is the kind of the first person almost you consult in world theater. That's the character you're watching because they're the protagonist in lots of ways, and everything they do is going to affect everybody else on the stage. Which is, I suppose, a very unwanted position for a lot of Americans. They just want to get on with their lives. They're thinking about what's in front of them. And it must be a bit of a burden, actually.
But with suicide bombers, one of the things I don't understand is, what's in it for the women suicide bombers? Because with the men, you know, it's a very male kind of promise at the end of it, 72 virgins. A man, I think, thought of that. And but I bet you what women are offered is much more modest. It's probably, you know, flexible working hours and decent childcare at the end of it, something like that. Vladimir Putin, how can he cultivates the idea of being a gangster? He just loves it. How can you trust anybody who looks like they've been cloned from a dead shark? Or Berlusconi in Italy, right? The envy of the world, Italy, in terms of history, art and culture. 98 different political parties, and they still managed to elect him. He's so crooked, he sleeps on a spiral staircase.
What are some of your favorite targets, if you will?
Well, you know, I don't know if I call them targets, because I don't really sort of, I'm not interested in attacking something for its own sake. I'm interested in what I'm interested in, and what I'm interested in tends to be my own life, my own experience, and what I see intersects or overlaps with what I imagine most people's experience is, because I have to deal with what's universal. I'm traveling around in all these different zones, you know, from Britain to Poland to Germany to Russia to America or Australia. So these are all, you know, fairly different environments in some ways. Some are superficial and not and trivial, and some quite important. So I'm always drawn to the constants, you know, what people are talking around as they sit around their kitchen table, how people are dealing with children. What, I mean, if you look at the concerns of people all around the world, you know, say, just to go back to politics for a second, in you know, when all the politicians are out there before an election, what people are worried about is all the very, very obvious stuff that they mention all the time. Their energy bills, feeding and clothing their families, educating their kids, their children having a better experience than themselves. That's really it, you know, most of the time for most people. So that inevitably, a lot of what you talk about is going to be around those areas, because that's where all our big myths and stories come from. It's, you know, father figures and mother figures and the lover and the somebody who eloped. And it's these are the dramas of our lives that are played out in our kitchens and bedrooms. You know, it's not world consequential stuff. It's domestic drama, a lot of it.
Which country is least able to take a joke?
That's a good question, because there are places that are far more sensitive. I mean, Americans are actually fairly sensitive about what you say about them. And I always think that's very interesting, because you are such a strong country that there is this, you know, there's a lot of jingoism and a lot of insecurity, which is strange because you are so immensely powerful. But I think that's because there's a lot of self-doubt, actually, in America. And that's why you get these affirmations all the time. I'm always, you know, I always say this, I'm amazed at the amount of American movies. There was a big run of them recently, where in the last reel, the character who's the president will be making some speech that always ends with the phrase, the American people, or, you know, because of the indomitable spirit of the American people. There's a load of those movies, you know, where the White House was attacked or something like that. That feature seems to loom large in people's imaginations at the moment in America. They feel like some sort of jig is up, or, you know, they're going to be called out or something like that. It seems to worry them. But, you know, there's lots of sensitivities. Like, if you go, I was in Germany, you know, so I'm talking of people, you're talking in English, people are sitting there, you know, they're thinking, what's he going to say about the war, about the Second World War? I was in Serbia last week, and certainly one way to get people's attention in a theatre in Serbia is to say, you know, in the rest of Europe, whenever Serbia comes up, we always say, that if you just say that to get that far, you won't hear a pin drop in the house. So yeah, everybody's concerned about what everybody else thinks about them, is what I would say. You know, they're interested in what their neighbors say about them, or what their enemies have said about them over the years. I was in Kazakhstan, and I said, you know, everybody laughs at somebody, so who do you laugh at here? And as one, the audience shouted out Kazakhstan, which I thought was very funny.
Well, why do you think there are not more Irish comedians?
Why do I think there are not more? Well, there are plenty. Do you want more? Do you want me to
Sure.
Do you want me to call some people? Is this not working out for you?
I just want more.
There are actually plenty. I'm sure there are sites that people like you can go to.
Okay. Well, I think you're the one that has achieved the most notoriety.
Well, yeah? I don't know. I don't have a notoriety measuring instrument, but I know I've got around a bit for sure.
Yeah. When you decide on material for your routines, or are you just constantly taking notes, or are you just looking at everything? Or
yeah, I do take notes where and when I can. It can be hard when you're traveling, but I do try to take notes, because often something will come to you and then it's gone and you won't get it back. Yeah, it is anything and everything. You know, I scan newspapers, I talk to people. I find talking to people quite productive, actually, because you're speaking to someone who's in situ and dealing with that particular city, and they can tell you what's going on and what the big news was recently. And everybody's got an opinion. You don't have to force it out of people most of the time. The only time it's not really productive, if somebody's trying to big up the place or sell you their city in some sort of touristy way. But if people just tell you what it's like to live there, it's always interesting.
Just as a last question, can you tell us about your deal with ABC Television?
I can tell you that I have a deal with ABC Television, I'm going to deliver a pilot for a show before Thanksgiving, I think, and it's sort of set in and around. It's got to do with media and conflict. That's about as much as I can really say.
All right.
Modern news reporting.
Okay. Well, we have some ideas here if you're looking for them.
Okay. All right.
All right. Dylan Moran, thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much.
I live in Scotland. Have you been to Scotland? See, that's the exact same number of people as answered that question in the affirmative when I asked it in England. And English people don't go up there. It's nearly half the country, and they don't go up. And you say, why don't you go? And they go, oh, well, you know, it's very dark and dreary. Because they get so used to the crocodiles and the tropical storms down there in England, and they... Dark and dreary, you can't understand the accent, the food's disgusting. A lot of violence, a lot of drugs, people injecting temazepam into each other's stumps. And otherwise, I'd go, you know, and...
Irish comedian Dylan Moran chatted with Dan Harmon before a show last fall at Turner Hall Ballroom. You can find a link to more about him from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. That'll bring us to the end of another work week's worth of Lake Effect. Say that three times fast. We are produced by Stephanie Lecce, Dan Harmon, and Bonnie North, with production assistance from Eleanor Peterson, Nathan Royster, and Craig Worrell, as well as web support from Michelle Maternowski and studio engineering by John Strelecki. You've survived the polar vortex. Maybe this weekend you can put away your Gore-Tex. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next.